The authorities in northeastern Afghanistan say a member of parliament was among at least 10 people killed in a suicide attack at a funeral. The explosion in Taligan in Takhar province happened as mourners were leaving a service for a government official. BBC News.
The Queen's Christmas message to the Commonwealth and the nation is at 3 o'clock this afternoon here on Radio 4. And then Gardener's Question Time will include advice on how to care for those Christmas plant gifts. That's at 3:15. But now, on Radio 4, a Christmas special. In Archie Scottney's dramatisation of this celebrated satirical novel, some of the absurdities of 1920s England and the English are viewed through the eyes of a young Scotsman. He makes some surprising discoveries and takes part in possibly the most famous cricket match in literature.
England, There England by A.G. MacDonnell. Starring Ewan Griffith, Alfred Molina, Rufus Sewell, Ian Ogilvy, Jill Gascoigne, Lloyd Owen, Sophie Winkleman and Michael York, with Ian Hislop as Editor Hodge and Tony Curran as Donald Cameron.
The events I'm about to describe had their origin in a conversation which took place between two artillery subalterns, Lieutenant Evan Davis and Lieutenant Donald Cameron, me. We were both temporarily attached to English battalions on the Western Front in 1917. We talked about the general bloodiness of the war and discussed, in discreet whispers, the characteristics of our English infantry hosts.
Oh, yes, I've lived for 5 years in London, Donald. And I must admit, I find the English extraordinarily difficult to understand.
I've really only seen them as soldiers. I wasn't in London for more than a day or two when I was on leave.
What do you think of them as soldiers?
They're such an extraordinary mixture. Why do the English always laugh when Aberdeen is mentioned?
Heaven knows. Why do they have a Welsh Prime Minister and a Scotch First Sea Lord?
Not Scotch. Scots or Scottish.
Sorry, Scottish. And think it funny.
Lord knows.
But then, why does the average Englishman pretend he's a perfect devil with his fists when really he's the most peaceable soul in the world and then suddenly turn into a first-class soldier?
Yes, but then why does the Englishman...
Oh, this'll drive us mad. Have a drop of scotch. I beg your pardon? A drop of Scots or Scottish?
Oh, good stuff.
Donald, I'm a publisher by profession. I've got an office near Covent Garden. And the more I see of the Englishman, the more bewildered I become. And they're always getting themselves up in fancy dress. Look at their beefeaters and their Chelsea pensioners and their barristers' wigs and trooping of the colour. Show an Englishman a fancy dress and he puts it on.
Aye, they sound rather fascinating.
My theory is that they're fundamentally a nation of poets. Mind you, they'd be lurid with rage if you told them. Imagine what the colonel over there would say if you told him that he was a poet.
I'd rather like to write a book about them someday.
It wants writing. Look me up after this bloody war is over and we'll discuss it.
Oh, seriously?
You bet your life I'm serious. You'll find me in the telephone book. Davis and Llewellyn Glendower, Henrietta Street.
Oh, right. Thanks.
SOS workers requested! Outside!
That's us! Hell, now we're off! Retaliation wanted! Listen, it's a regular corker of a barrage. Have you got any rockets left? Yeah, two red and two green. Come on, outside! Let's hope the damn things work. March, coming up. Go! March, got it. Ready! And go! Great. Come on, get back inside.
Yes.
Donald!
Just a minute.
I woke up a fortnight later in the hospital at Lutuke, concussion and shell shock. When I finally got home in the spring of 1921, with my £85 per annum, my father was surprised.
I won't say I'm not glad to see you for my sake, because I am, but not for your sake. Balspindi is for old men.
And what for the young ones, father?
The world.
Well, I've seen quite enough of the world for the time being.
Aye. Well, it's a child's instinct. You've been hurt and you're in hame to your mother. Your mother's deed. And Balspindi has to die in her place. Well, you can stay to your well again. But after that, it's the road for you, my boy. You come back here to die, if you like. But you go out there to live meanwhile. There's plenty to do here.
There was, and I did it. I worked in the fields, and in time managed to plough a furrow that was quite creditable.
I might have ploughed that one myself, if I'd been blindfolded and short of one arm and with a team of horses that rocketed about like steeplechasers.
For several years, we continued our odd partnership, until...
Your father has left just over £7,000 to you, Donald.
£7,000?
Aye. But there's a condition. You're to spend no more than 1 month in the year north of the Tweed until you're 50 years of age.
Well, where did he get the money?
We don't know. The original sum was about £3,500. It's been lying in Aberdeen at compound interest for over 20 years. So, will you be off on your travels now then, Donald?
I had no qualifications for any profession, so I resolved to try my fortune as a journalist. Well, there seemed to be no other profession which required neither ability nor training.
Go right in, Mr. Cameron.
I had a letter of introduction to a Mr. William Hodge, editor of the London Weekly, which was entirely devoted to the arts.
There's the door. First on your right.
All right, thank you. I'm afraid Mr. Hodge is engaged.
Shouldn't be surprised. Go in.
Well, I think I'd better wait till he's disengaged.
Just as you like.
I believe Mr. Hodge is also a poet.
I'm told so. Here you are, a review of his latest.
William Hodge, author of several books of poems, exquisite in words, lofty in thought, a fastidious genius who publishes a poem seldom, a bad poem never. Reviewed in the... London Weekly. Did he write it himself?
Who knows? Rupert Harcourt, probably.
How long is it likely to be?
How long is what likely to be?
Before he is disengaged.
What?
Before he's disengaged! Sorry.
William's never disengaged. You might as well go in now. Go on, shoo! Shoo!
Okay, thank you for your time.
No, really?
Excuse me.
Mr. Cameron, come and sit down. And how's my good friend at the university library?
Well, he sent you a letter.
Oh, don't bother about that. They're usually lies. Now, everybody, let me introduce Mr. Cameron. Mr. Livingstone, Mr. Prosser,
how do you do?
Mr. Harcourt,
hello.
And our American cousin, Mr. Shakespeare Pollock.
Howdy.
Oh, hello there, nice to meet you.
Mr. Cameron's another of these infernal Scotsmen, Pollock. I rather fancy he comes from the neighbourhood of Aberdeen.
Well, I'm afraid I do.
There once was a fella from Aberdeen.
Let's hear it.
Flaming fish, but this is a stinking country.
Oh, yes. And this is Mr. Huggins.
Well, how do you do?
I'll have you remember, Bill, you spavin-bellied scum. My family name is Ugin. They were Ugin in the Channel Islands a long time before Duke Robert of Normandy cast his eyes upon the tanner's daughter.
You're a Frenchman. Well, I mean, your English is so perfect.
Frenchman? He's no more French than I am, are you, Tommy? That's only his lunacy, Cameron.
Well, he said his family name was Ugin.
It is, in a sense. It's Huggins. Tommy Huggins.
He comes from Bolton, don't you, Tommy?
Je vous en prie.
He went to the war as an infantry, Tommy, and performed prodigies of valour. Now, the real question, Cameron, is whether you play cricket.
Cricket?
A game played with dice and counters.
Shut up, Rupert. Do you play cricket, Mr. Cameron?
Well, I used to years ago.
Good for him.
How's that?
Very good indeed.
Splendid.
Flaming fish.
You're just the man we need. I'm raising a side to play in a village in Kent, Saturday week.
Oh, I haven't played for ages.
That doesn't matter two straws. Do you bat or bowl?
Well, not really either.
Splendid. Now, it's gone 11:30. How about a drink?
Oh, I thought he'd never
Splendid.
Ask.
Splendid.
I've been saying that every 5 minutes since they opened.
Come along. Follow my finger.
Well, all right. Good to me.
Oh, yeah, right.
I'll be back in a quarter of an hour, Gwen.
No, you won't, William.
I assure you, my dear Gwen. Oh, all right. Come on, everyone. Black cat it is. Follow the grey bug.
So, black cat followed by pink mouse.
Not any clean. He's pretty useless with his right arm. Medium pace.
Hello there. We shared a pillbox at Passchendaele.
Good heavens. You're Davis.
How clever of you. And now I'm going to be clever. Your name's Cameron.
That's it. Well...
Have a drink. You don't remember my suggestion in that infernal concrete bunker, I suppose?
Oh, I got concussion that same day. I'm sorry.
I'm a publisher. I suggested you might try a book about England for us. England as seen through the eyes of a Scotsman. We could fix up for you to meet people. You know the sort of thing. Typical Englishman.
Well, I'd love to have a shot at it.
When can you start?
At once?
Good man. And look, I've got a small dinner party tonight. The sort of people who might be useful. Will you come along? 8:15.
I should like to very much.
Black tie? 74B Mount Street.
Oh, thanks.
I met Sir Ethelred Ormerod MP and Lady Ormerod at the dinner party. Amazingly, they invited me to spend the following weekend with them at their country home in Surrey.
The Royals will meet you at Godalming at noon.
Bring you to the Towers in good time for luncheon.
At a little after 10 o'clock on the Saturday morning, I was still in my Chelsea digs, in a state of some perplexity. I didn't know which bits of my scanty wardrobe I ought to pack.
Hell, thanks! But this is a flamingly lucky chance.
What? Mr. Huggins? What on earth?
I was roaring down the King's Road just now when I saw a shop which advertised Corsican wine. Look! Fleur de Maquis, by the bones of the Ramolinos. Oh, jump to it, lad, jump to it.
Jump to what?
Corkscrew, boy, corkscrew and glasses.
But we can't drink at 10 in the morning.
Have you got a touch of the sun? Very rare in London, early May. Must write to the Lancet about that. Oh, come on. Two corkscrews and a glass, or two glasses and a corkscrew, whichever you like. Oh, by the son of Austerlitz, but that is the stuff. Hello. What's all this confusion of haberdashery?
Oh, it's embarrassing. I'm invited to Ormerod Towers for the weekend. They're meeting me at Godalming Station at midday, and I'm not sure what to pack.
It's a very, very lucky thing for you that I'm here to advise you. Oh, I say, Cameron, I hope you don't mind my interrupting you, but I am in rather a hurry. I have to sit up tonight with a sick friend.
Oh, of course. I mean, don't let me keep you. Well, if your friend is unwell...
Oh, he's all right now. He won't be sick until he knows that I'm going to sit up with him. Pass me the fleur. Cameron, be guided by me. The crux of the Country House weekend is the servant. You follow me?
No, not quite.
Listen carefully. Get at the rich man's servant before he gets at you. Treat them rough and they're lovely. Treat them humble and they're ill. Attack, attack, attack. You can fool all the lackeys all the time. Cheerio, old chap. You can thank me another time.
But you haven't told me what clothes to take.
My dear chap, that's the problem. And I'll give you the solution. Take all the clothes you've got. The more the better. Take one suitcase, the butler sneers, the footman giggle. Take 50, they'll treat you like the Duke of Westminster.
But I've only got two small ones. Besides, some of my things are so old.
Wait there. Back soon.
But wait. Oh, good heavens.
He was back in 10 minutes with what seemed like a dozen second-hand suitcases and started to pack all my belongings into them.
Wait a minute. I can't take a pair of grey flannels with a hole in the knee.
Give me those scissors. There you are. Shorts for otter hunting. Put them in the otter hunting suitcase. I'm labelling this one Beagling Kit. Now, pass me that broken umbrella. Oh, and get those pictures off the wall. They'll go nicely into this one. Amateur theatricals. And all newspapers into this one. That's it. Cord it up. I'm labelling it Dispatches Secret.
But Mr. Huggins, this is...
Don't despair not, despair not. I'm coming to the station with you. Don't you fret. They'll be calling you Excellency on the platform. And another thing. I'll fix that bloody butler.
What? Well, how do you mean?
Trust me.
May I respectfully bid you welcome to Ormerod Towers, Mr. Cameron, sir. John and Henry will see to the unloading of your luggage, sir. I myself will attend to the secret dispatches case. I was warned by telephone, my lord, from London.
Oh, where are you? Thank you.
The secretary of the French Foreign Ministry rang up, sir, and Budapest has also been on the line. Budapest is to telephone again, sir.
Ah, I see.
Of course, this was Mr. Huggins' method of fixing that bloody butler. I cursed him. But at the same time...
The house party is walking in the grounds, Mr. Cameron. Except those who are upstairs writing letters. They'll all be returning shortly for luncheon. If you would care to follow me?
Yes, sir. Of course.
croquet mallet.
We are thrilled you're able to join us, Mr. Cameron.
Thank you.
The Duke of Devonshire has been on the telephone. You are on no account to telephone him, but you are to go to Chatsworth in time for luncheon on Monday, and to say nothing to anyone.
Oh, thank you.
I understand. Ever since I came out against shooting those who led the coal strike, I have known what's what. So, oh yes, shush is my watchword.
I say, Mr. Cameron.
Yes?
You're the boy I want to see. Exemplary lunch, eh?
Oh, excellent.
Now, what do you make of this latest sport, hmm? Greyhound racing.
Well, it's one of the kindliest.
What do you mean, boy?
Compared with hunting, no tearing to pieces of a tired fox by 60 dogs. And greyhound racers don't polish off their animal with a machine gun.
That's true. But no way of proving for certain that the mechanical hare enjoys being hunted, which we know is the case with the deer or the fox, eh? Anyway, enough. Step in here. Close the door. Well, boy, you know me. Everyone knows me. That's my ticket. Now, can you tell me anything?
Well, surely there's nothing I can tell you about anything.
Ah, so that's how it stands, does it? Nothing has moved since Tuesday?
What do you mean by nothing?
Well, that's what I keep on telling them. The blasted monkeys, but they won't see it. Can you beat it?
Beat it? I can't. I can't.
Will it go?
Go? Go where?
Ah, I see. I see. Well, I never really thought it would. I won't deny I'm sick about it, but there. Are we downhearted? That's my ticket.
It wasn't until the evening that I learned he was one of the most famous of England's Labour leaders, the Right Honourable Robert Bloomer, MP. Well, I still didn't know what he'd been talking about. And then there was Esmeralda Davenant, film star.
Oh, I'm glad I've caught you alone.
Oh.
Salut.
Salut.
You are Donald, aren't you? I have a message for you.
A message?
Ivan Novello has just telephoned from Hollywood to say that he quite agrees with you, but he ought to say nothing now.
Oh, no, he really is the limit. Is that all he said?
Oh, I do adore film magnates. You were expecting more.
Oh, perhaps not.
Oh, you clever, clever man. I've never seen such a perfectly assumed expression of innocence. Come closer. Oh, love your nervous naivete. You Iron Man. Such devastating sex appeal.
Excuse me. Blast that bloody Huggins. Yes? What is it?
I'm so sorry, sir. I beg your pardon, sir. I've brought you a cocktail. If it won't interfere with your training, sir.
My what?
Your training, sir. They rang up, sir. They...
Who rang up?
The Chelsea Football Club, sir. Oh, Mr. Wilson, sir, I'm so proud to be looking after you, sir. The finest centre-forward in the world. Thank you, sir. A real honour, sir. Thank you.
Bloomer told me your news, Cameron.
What news?
You can keep your mouth shut. Good man.
That's the gallant Captain de Wilton Fallow, Conservative member for somewhere. His military rank has mysteriously survived into the days of peace.
Hmm. Interesting.
Some ranks have survived, some not. No one knows the reason. I rather admire his silky moustache.
I can tell you how to deal with boers and batons and waziris.
No one, Mr. Cameron, can really understand the Indian problem unless they've actually lived there. The only solution is to let the natives try another mutiny and then show them what was what. A few soldiers like my Horace ought to be given a free hand. Blast them from the guns.
I'm very worried about this empty chair. Oh, it's just like Rupert. I ask you, isn't it just like Rupert?
Which Rupert is it? Do you know, Mr. Cameron? Out of all the Ruperts possible, there are so many.
What ho, all?
A fine time you call this, Harcourt.
Oh, that Rupert.
So here you are, Rupert.
Harcourt, you made it.
Greetings, Sir Eth. Apologies.
Hello there, Cameron. You here?
Splendid material, what?
Sorry to be late, ladies and gents. Tied up with the blasted book review, a charming novella entitled Rat-Riddled Bilge Bestank.
Oh, grizzly.
Well, if I'm grizzly, you're bear, so we're well matched.
How sweet.
Ah, Nuit Saint-Georges, parfait. Pretty damn dull party. How are the lovers, Esmeralda, going strong?
Naughty boy.
What? Look here, Harcourt, this isn't the Bombay Bicolour Club, you know.
Oh, really, General? Well, Bloomer, I hear we're going to clear out of India at last.
Are we? I hadn't heard.
Oh, yes, quite true. Though, of course, not officially announced yet. The Indian Civil is going to be abolished, and no Englishman is to hold higher rank in the army than colour sergeant.
What?
Yes, and the word Sahib is to be forbidden.
Oh, nonsense. Devilish nonsense.
Oh, dear me.
Grizzly.
The trouble with the English is that they're too modest. We are admittedly the finest governors in the world, so why don't we just go on governing?
Yeah, yeah.
The English are too reserved.
In my view, if a white man is going to be a white man, he has to be reserved.
Reserve is all right for women, surely. Don't you agree, Mr. Cameron?
After the ladies had left the table, the talk turned to politics. I wished I could openly produce my notebook. It's at just such weekend parties, when the brandy and cigars are going round, that the affairs of England are very largely settled.
Well, Bob, and when are we going to get a really decent tariff instead of this footling 10%?
As soon as we've drowned all those Liberals. Won't be so long now.
Poisonous crew of traitors. I wish I'd had them in my company in the old days at Abbottabad. Of course, they're all in the pay of Moscow.
I think it's just a form of insanity.
I hope you're right. I'd sooner have to deal with loonies than with traitors.
Really?
Isn't the trouble with Russia that there's no cricket there?
Grizzly. I agree profoundly that Liberals are insane, but I'm not persuaded that they are treacherous as well.
I'm a Liberal.
What?
Let us join the ladies before blood is shed.
Really?
Good God! Good heavens! Ladies! I've forgotten where I am.
You're in Ormerod Towers, Rupert.
Yes, I know that, Lady O, but I've forgotten what sort of party it is. Are we up-to-date moderns, mixing gin and beer and wallowing in T.S. Eliot? Or are we straight-living chaps who sing the Eton boating song a good deal? Or are we all just simple boys and girls together, darting in and out of each other's bedrooms? Strike me pink if I know what to make of it.
You're at an ordinary English weekend party, sir!
Come, come, General. We want none of your barrack room licentiousness here. I shall have to sleep on the mat outside Esmeralda's door if this sort of thing is to be allowed.
What the devil do you mean?
I don't know what sort of chivalry they teach at Sandhurst or Woolwich, but to an old Giggleswickian, a woman is sacred.
Whatever for?
I've forgotten now, but they used to tell us.
I never see the point of sneering at the public school system.
The public school is the breeding ground of great men.
Not necessarily the public school, but the public school type.
Damn good show, the public school. Those grammar school oiks are a pretty grisly set of oiks. Grocer sons and oiks and whatnot. Oik. My father was a grocer. I'm sorry.
Not surprised to hear it.
But Rupert, I thought all your family were soldiers.
Only the ones who weren't clever enough to be taken into the grocery business.
Oh, going to bed.
I wish someone would tell me if this is the sort of weekend party where I offer to come with you.
Disgrace.
Really, Rupert? I won't allow you to say such things.
No, but will Esmeralda? That's the point.
Good night. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Miss. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Cameron.
Good night, Miss Davenant.
And Sunday at Ormerode Towers was just the same as the Saturday. I went back to Chelsea on the Monday with a full notebook.
Donald, now don't forget, Saturday morning, Charing Cross Underground Station.
Right.
10:15 sharp, and don't be late.
I arrived at the embankment entrance of Charing Cross at 10:10. At 10:40, an amiable individual carrying a cricketing bag and wearing a striped blazer sauntered up.
Hello there. You playing?
I am. But where is everybody?
Keep an eye on my bag, would you? I'm going to get a shave.
What?
Sharabang isn't here anyway.
At 10:55, there was a respectable muster. At 5 minutes past, Rupert Harcourt arrived.
Gentlemen, Charing Cross pubs open at 11 a.m.
Jolly good.
Well, come along then.
Oh, rather.
When Mr. Hodge turned up at 25 minutes past 11, he was indignant at the slackness of his team.
They've no sense of time, Donald. We're late as it is. The match is due to begin at 11:30.
What?
And it's 50 miles away. I should have been here myself 2 hours ago, but I had my Sunday article to do. It really is too bad. Anyway, here's the charabang. Extricate them, will you, and we'll be off. Oh, by the way, Donald, fancy doing a little book reviewing?
Reviewing? Oh, I don't know.
Wait a minute. It's in my cricket bag. There you are, proof copy.
What is it? The Seven Pillars of Wisdom?
Wisdom, more like. Maybe.
An interpretation of the Buddhist religion in 4 volumes.
It's by some Burmese professor at the University of Minneapolis. I'll need 1,000 words by Friday.
But I'm totally unfit for the task.
Why? You'll get a fee?
I know nothing about the Buddhist religion.
You will by the time you've read those 4 volumes.
All right, give him the tutorial, Rupert.
Tutorial?
You'll love it. It goes like this. Read the publisher's jacket first. If it says the book is a thought-provoking expose of the political situation in sub-Carpathian Ruthenia, then the odds are the book is about sub-Carpathian Ruthenia. So you've got the subject.
You then look at the chapter index.
That gives you the scope of the book.
You know, whether it covers the religious stuff or gives a list of hotels or sketches the history of the place in Totila and so on.
Then all you've got to do is read the last 2 paragraphs to see whether the author thinks the sub-Carpathian Ruthenians are good eggs or bad eggs, and there you are.
Got it? There you are, Donald. Your first sight of rural England. Fordenden, ye olde Englishy village. And a smooth, shining emerald of grass. Well, fairly smooth. And perfect to the last detail. Even the blacksmith, you see, loosening his braces.
And his bowling arm.
Pity we've only got 9 men. And no umpire. We'll start at 2:30, everyone.
On a bench outside the Three Horseshoes pub on the boundary sat a row of elderly men, facing a row of pint tankards. I went back to the bus to see if I could help with the luggage, and when I returned, I noticed another group of men clustered together talking animatedly. One or two of them seemed familiar. Then I realised that they were Mr. Hodge and the team, already sampling the proprietor's wares.
All right, everyone. I've spoken to the Fordenden captain, Jack the baker here.
That's right, Mr. Hodge, and we're going to lend you 2 substitutes.
So we can field 11 men. Thank you, Jack.
Unfortunately, Mr. Hodge, my 2 men I told to field on both sides, and I bat for neither, aren't taking it in good part.
Oh, dear.
They've just gone home.
Yes, that is unfortunate. Well, I suppose... Oh, look, here we are. Here are 2 defaulters just arrived. It's all right. You can get your men back, Jack.
Oh, right.
Sorry about that, Bill. Had to stop off at the White Hart in Sevenoaks.
Many apologies, Bill. Calls of nature. We brought Dennis with us, too.
Hello, Bill.
Dennis? What on earth are you doing here? You're not down to play.
Not down? I bally well am, Bill. You asked me in the pink mats 2 weeks ago, and I'm bally well playing.
All right, calm down. Oh, Lord. We'd better reorganise on a 12-a-side basis. Jack, sorry, you'll need to find a 12th man. Thank you. So, let's toss a coin. Watch this, Cameron. Never fails. Little system of my own devising, founded on differential calculus and the Copernican theory. You call, Jack.
Heads.
Oh, bad luck, it's tails. We'll bat. Livingston and Boone, get padded up. Mine's a pint, Roger.
I say, Harcourt, Boone's cap and jersey, are they the club colours?
Hardly. They're the majestic trappings of a Cambridge blue.
Really? It doesn't seem quite fair to lose such a crack player on an English village.
Cameron, don't you think that as a foreigner, admitted by courtesy to our national game, you ought not to set yourself as a judge of what is and what is not cricket?
Oh, right. Sorry.
Go on, Dan. Get right out there. John. On the boundary. Deep mid-wicket. No, beyond the dandelions. And Ned, deeper over there by the thistle down in them clumps.
All right.
Range yourself round. Yeah, that's it. Long on. Get further down the slope. I can still see you.
At the end from which the blacksmith was to open the attack, the ground behind him was level for a few yards and then sloped away. So it was only during the last 3 or 4 yards of his run that he was actually visible to the batsman. Or indeed to anyone except the man stationed in the deep field behind him. This man saw very little of the game, except for the occasional ball driven smartly over the brow of the hill in his direction.
Right. Play.
Here he is.
That's four boys.
Full pitched a leg. It's in the long grass.
Four boys.
Four boys. I can't remember the last time we had four boys signal.
What was Joe thinking of?
Oh, this ground. Here, Tom, more pints of old and mild.
Blacksmith's fast, all right, eh, Dennis?
Yeah, but not necessarily straight, William. Landlord, more pints of bitter here. What do you think, Prof?
Let's work out its muzzle velocity. Highest at the muzzle, of course, but the velocity of a projectile drops off steadily because of air resistance. So, it could be worse. Oh, thanks. Cheers.
Cheers.
The third ball went full pitch into the wicketkeeper's stomach.
Oh, ah! Bad luck, George! All right, Arthur, you take over. Get the pads and gloves off him.
The fourth ball took Mr. Livingston's leg bail with a bullet-like full pitch.
Ten runs for one wicket. Last man, six.
The professor got the fifth ball on the left ear and went back to the three horseshoes, while Mr. Harcourt had the singular misfortune to hit his wicket before the sixth ball was even delivered.
Oh, whoops. Sorry.
Bad luck, Rupert.
Oh, doesn't matter.
That's 10 runs for 2 wickets and one man retired hurt. Oh, slow left-hander on at the other end. I remember him. A man of infinite patience and guile. Local rate collector, probably. So come on, Boone. Watch him like a hawk. Oh, for goodness sake, Boone. That was execrable.
I don't understand it, Rupert. A Cambridge Blue stumped first ball. Why would such a famous player play so dreadful a stroke?
He gained his blue for rowing, not for cricket.
Oh.
10 for 3 and one man hurt.
Ah. Well, who's this little chap going in? Looks as if a fast one might knock the bat out of his hands.
That's Robert Southcott, the novelist. Play carefully, Bobby. Keep your end up. Runs don't matter.
Very well, Bill.
You follow the strategy, Donald?
Ah, what sort of a team spirit, you mean?
That's it. The captain's instructing Southcott to play a particular type of game, and Bobby is loyally suppressing his individual instincts.
Should be interesting.
Oh! A six!
Oh, six!
Look out! Oh, a six!
Look out!
Look out! Right into the Zaluka!
Well played, Bobby!
Wait for it. That's his Yorker.
That was another
six! Well played!
Well played, Bobby!
Oh, right in the squire's trout stream.
He's only little tits. They'll have to fish it out with a bamboo pole and an old bucket.
That's right. Pity them poor fish, eh?
That'll tickle the trout.
Look, here comes
another one! Go out and umpire for a bit, Rupert. Your turn. Give Archie a rest.
Oh, Bill, do I have to?
Yes, off you go. Here, you can't take your pint with you. Put it down. Give it to me.
Very well. It is a far, far better thing than I do. All right, here I am. Hello, Bobby. Well played. Keep it up.
Thank you, Rupert.
Ready, bowler? Play.
No ball!
Bad luck, Blacksmith! You've got one of your own side!
My kneecap, Joe!
Mind the nettles, fielder!
I'm just in my ankle, Jack.
What about my knee?
You needn't play safe anymore, Bobby. Play your own game.
Thank you, Bill.
Southcott then seemed to go into a kind of cricketing trance. He defended his wicket skillfully from every straight ball, he ignored the crooked ones, and he only scored one more run in a quarter of an hour before a ball actually struck him way above his belt. The opposing team's umpire reacted like lightning.
Out!
But no one's even appealed.
69 for 6, last man 52. All right, in you go, Pollock. And remember the fundamental principles.
Got it, Skipper.
Good luck, gang.
All righty. Okay. Let her rip, fella.
Don't you want guard?
Pardon me?
Guard.
Guard what?
Guard. Don't you want to take guard?
How do you mean, take guard? I wouldn't know what to do with it when I got it.
All right, suit yourself. Play.
Okay. Sitting Bull, let's see what you... Yeah! General Custer, here I go, little bighorn!
here! What are you doing? Where are you going? Hey!
Huh? Where am I going? Where do you think I... Oh! Heck! Well, for God's sake, I thought I was playing baseball.
Hey? You thought what? Baseball?
Is that why you threw your bat away?
Baseball is kind of rounders, isn't it, sir?
Huh? What's that you say? Rounders? Why, that's a sissy game!
Thank you, sir.
Well, that's it. Well batted, Donald. Not out naught. Very creditable. Sorry I couldn't stay with you. I was, unsighted. 69 all out. Refreshment, I think? You'll be opening the bowling, Hawker?
69. Is that a winning score?
Not in my book, it's not.
All over the place.
There's no gainsaying.
Right, disperse yourselves in the, hay, gentlemen. Fast as you like, Hawker. Hurl them down.
Aye, aye, Skipper.
Broken another stump!
Come on, Millie!
Good. 11 runs, 6 wickets, last man 2. Ah, new batsman.
Play. I said play.
We can't. There's no bowler.
Where's the bowler? Yes, where's Hawker? Hawker?
Where's Hawker?
Quick, I know where he is. Run, for God's sake. Bobby, Sid, Percy, to the shoes. Donald, come on.
Front door's closed. Oh, no. Go round the back.
Round the back.
Round the back.
This
round
way.
The
back. Oh, no. Too late.
Oh, Hawker.
Hello, Bill. Cheers. Cheerio, everyone.
Oh, Hawker, this is disgraceful. Look at this. He's already down a quart and a half. Oh, Hawker.
All right, sorry, Bill. Apologies. Oh, let's get back to them. Where's the pitch? Lead me on, gallant man.
Come along. On, play.
Sorry, Bill. Very sorry.
That's pathetic, Hawker.
I know, Bill.
We don't want donkey drops. Dennis... I suppose you'll have to bowl next.
About time, too.
Come on, Jeb. One run.
Look out, Pollock. He's way out of his...
Run him out.
Run him out. Run him out.
Oh! Throw it at the wicket, not at the batsman.
Coming your way, Bill. An easy one.
What? Oh.
Bill, you didn't even try to catch it.
Oh, no. I was admiring the oak tree in that garden over there. So sorry, but it is a particularly fine specimen. Never mind.
How's he? Not out.
What? He's plumb leg before. It was a perfectly straight ball.
That's as maybe, sir. But a black spot just happened to cross my eye. I have to give the batsman the benefit of the doubt. It's not my fault a black spot crossed my eye just at that moment.
Fair enough.
Oh, I said.
Come on, Dad!
Hey,
Dad! Hey, Dad!
Over.
7 to win, 5 wickets to fall. Assuming the blacksmith's ankle and that fellow's kneecap will stand the strain, I'm putting myself onto bowl.
Oh, no.
Now, listen, Donald, this is important. I prefer to win by brains, not muscle. I'd far sooner have my best leg break miss the wicket by an eighth of an inch than dismiss a batsman with a clumsy full toss.
Right.
Every ball I bowl has brain behind it.
If not exactness of pitch, eh, William?
Thank you, Dennis. So, first, field placing. All of you, over to the leg side. Go on, everyone, leg side, buck up, and you, Donald, go on. I shall bowl my in-swingers. Right, umpire.
Play.
Mr. Hodge's first ball was a slow long hop on the offside.
Come on, one run!
Rupert, where are you? Rupert, get up!
Rupert!
Rupert!
Ah, what are you doing? I was just having a nice doze out here. All right, watch this!
How
was that? You run out, Floyd. Out.
Well thrown, Rupert. They only need 6 to win, 4 wickets to fall. On your toes.
Mr. Hodge's final ball was not a good one, mainly because it slipped out of his hand before he was ready, and it went up and came down in a lazy parabola, about 7 feet wide of the wicket on the leg side.
Now's your chance, Jack. Show the village.
Their skipper sprang like a panther, whirled his bat, and missed the ball by about a foot and a half. The wicket-keeping publisher had also covered the 7 feet. When he got there, he launched a mighty kick at the ball, and by an amazing fluke, kicked it onto the wicket.
That's out.
What?
Sorry, Jack, but you're still flat on your face outside the crease.
Eh?
I was bowling for that.
I actually had plenty of time to use my hands, but I preferred to kick it. Well batted.
Hey, this is a subtle game.
Scores a level, one wicket to fall. Last man in. Oh, it's the blacksmith. How's your ankle, sir? Come on, chaps.
Skipper's going to run for me, all right?
All right.
Walter, give me two leg.
Toward you. That's two leg, Joe. Play.
The first ball the blacksmith received, he lashed out wildly and hit it straight up in the air to an enormous height. It went up and up and up until it became difficult to focus it properly against the deep cloudless blue of the sky. Up and up it went. In the meanwhile, things were happening below. In the first place, the blacksmith forgot his sprained ankle and set out for the other end.
Come on, Bert!
We'll bet your ankle!
Come on, Bert! I said come on, Bert!
Right, come on, Jack!
And everything would have been all right, so far as the running was concerned, had it not been that all three very naturally ran, with heads turned not only upwards, but also backwards, eyes goggling at the hawk-like cricket ball, until...
Oh! All right, that was all right, it's mine!
Leave it to me!
Bottom of the ninth! Come on, get in there! Bottom of the ninth!
Yours, Dennis! Oh no, you've already missed two sitters. Better be yours, Bobby!
Certainly.
Mr. Southcott, disciplined cricketer, having stopped dead, obediently started again, while Dennis, who had not heard the second order, went straight on. In the meantime, the professor of ballistics had made a lightning calculation and had arrived at the conclusion that the critical spot was 1 yard to the northeast of Boone. And he proceeded to take up station there, colliding on the way with me. A moment later, Bobby Southcott came racing up and tripped over me and went headfirst into Boone. Boone stepped back and his spiked boot came down upon the prof's toe. Almost simultaneously, the wicketkeeper bumped the professor from behind. At last, the ball came down. It was a striking testimony to the ballistical skill of the professor that the ball landed on the button of his cricket cap.
Quick, catch it, grab it!
It's before it rolls! I got it! Whoa! I got it! I caught the ball! Yeah! I got it!
A clutch catch!
Woo! The Giants win! England!
Yeah, for England! England wins! The Giants win! What do you say, Donald?
It's all right, Pollock.
Woo!
Pollock, calm down. The match is a tie. It's a tie.
What do you mean?
Jolly good. Mine's a jug. Well played, everybody.
I got home to Chelsea at 1 a.m, feeling I hadn't learnt very much about the English from the experience of their national game.
I'm out of my depth, Evan. My feet aren't on the ground.
I didn't imagine you'd find it very easy. But just remember that the English character is based fundamentally upon kindliness and poetry. And now listen to me. I've got a job for you.
What sort of a job?
A private secretaryship.
But I want to write things.
Of course you do, and I'm trying to help you. This is private secretary to an English politician. English, mind you. And it's only temporary. He's a lovely old boy, and he's just been appointed to the British delegation going to the Assembly of the League of Nations at Geneva in a fortnight. He wants someone to go with him and hold his hat and coat. All expenses... and a fiver a week for a month.
What a fool I am, of course.
His name's Sir Henry Wotton. I'll ring him and tell him you're coming to see him.
Now, I don't know much about this league, Cameron, but the PM's asked me, so of course I'm going. You follow me?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm all in favour of peace myself, as every sane man is. But I've got a sort of notion the best way to keep the peace... is the good old British way of building a thumping great fleet and letting the foreigners do what they damn well like, eh? It worked in the past, why not now? However, I'm told this league is the dodge now, and if that's so, I'm all in favour of it. See what I mean?
Yes, sir.
I don't really want a secretary in the proper sense of the word, Cameron. Your job at Geneva will be more like a cross between a valet and a friend. I mean, you'll have to find my hat for me. Keep me posted with the sporting news from home. See I don't run out of whiskey in the evenings and so on. Do you feel like taking it on?
Oh, I should be delighted.
Oh, splendid, splendid. Well, we leave on Friday morning. Oh, and you better find out what this league does, how it works, all that sort of thing.
At Geneva, I found it difficult to keep my mind on my task. I had to keep reminding myself that I was really engaged upon studying at close quarters the representatives of England as masters of international diplomacy, using all their skill for the betterment of their empire.
De cognac, monsieur.
Ah, jolly good. Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Now, look here, Cameron. Seems I've been assigned to the, what's it called?
The Committee for the Abolition of Social Abuses, Sir Henry.
Good, yes. What exactly are the abuses?
Well, it appears the two main abuses are the illicit traffic in synthetic beer.
Ah, yes.
And the existence in certain countries of houses of ill repute.
That's it, yes. So, get the official policy from the Foreign Office expert, will you? He's somewhere in the hotel.
Yes?
Mr. Cartwright Pendragon?
That is my name, sir. Pendragon.
Well, I am Sir Henry Wotton's private secretary. My name is Cameron.
How do you do? Well?
Well, it's about Sir Henry and the Social Abuses Commission.
Oh. Sit down.
Well, Sir Henry wants to know what line he has to take about the traffic in synthetic beer.
Line? I don't quite follow.
Well, he thinks he'll probably have to make a speech about it, you see. He wants to know what to say.
Oh, usual things. Devotion of British Commonwealth to ideals of League, nation of peace lovers, all must cooperate, wonderful work of League, praise of the Secretariat, a word about Woodrow Wilson, and a tribute to the French. Good.
But why a tribute to the French?
It's the usual way to finish off a speech here. It does no harm, and the French like it.
But what about synthetic beer?
What about it?
Well, I mean, what is their policy?
Policy? I'm sorry, policy?
Yes.
Ah, policy. My dear sir, we don't have policies about things.
But how does anything get settled?
Oh, they get settled, all right. If not now, at some other time. When in doubt, agree with the Frenchman. Or if you prefer it, disagree with the Italian. It's all one.
And what about brothels? What do we say about them?
Well, the last six assemblies, we simply said that we don't know what they are. All you have to do is say it again. Good morning.
And in conclusion, gentlemen and ladies of the Commission, I have been asked by our distinguished President of the Committee for the Suppression of Social Abuses to put the following motion before you. The hour is now a quarter to two, and we have laboured long and earnestly this morning in the cause that we all have at heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would put it to you, with the greatest respect, that the time is at hand when we must decide whether to adjourn now for midday refreshment and resume our task, our so important task, with redoubled vigour later in the day, or whether to continue without rest or interval until we have satisfactorily settled the problem of these abuses while fresh in our minds. So may I propose, ladies and gentlemen of the Commission, that we should now come to a decision upon this matter. The motion is, in simple terms, if we don't stop now, we'll be late for lunch. Those in favour?
Aye.
Carried.
Oh, something that might amuse you, Cameron. You know the reason why the president of our committee was able to carry through so triumphantly the sections dealing with traffic in dangerous drugs?
No.
He's a lifelong addict to heroin himself.
Really?
Heard it from the Yugoslav delegate. New Zealand confirms it.
Good Lord.
You see, the president's knowledge enabled him to throw cold water on the Swiss representative.
The one who was saying
that Switzerland has entirely extirpated drug traffickers from her free and snowy soil, exactly. Point being, having run out of his supply of heroin the other morning, the president approached a gendarme opposite the hotel and inquired whether there was a drug seller in the vicinity. The gendarme saluted and said, "Does your excellency perceive that house along the street with pink shutters?" "Well, your excellency, that is the only house in this vicinity that I know of at which drugs are not procurable."
Good heavens.
Yes, agreeable fellow, the president. So, back to the assembly. Your very good health, Cameron.
Oh, thank you, Sir Henry.
Yeah, the last few days have been a little more entertaining, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I've enjoyed the lunch parties thoroughly. Well, the bathing and the yachting.
Yes, to say nothing of the discreet little dinners by starlight. Well, peacemakers, Cameron, no less than warriors, need relaxation. Yes, I'm satisfied about the speeches, by the way, keeping to the lines laid down by that diplomat fellow.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah. Matter of fact, my speeches were so like each other, so carefully phrased. It didn't matter a damn that the synthetic beer one was printed in the official report section relating to houses of ill repute.
Well, I don't think anyone noticed.
And vice versa. What's that you got there?
Well, I was just checking off the results the Assembly has achieved.
Hardly a man, woman, or child on the surface of the globe whose lives will not be affected for the better by plans laid, schemes evolved, and measures taken.
Well, it's amazing. British diplomacy. I can see its genius exists, but I can't for the life of me grasp how it works.
That's the genius of it, one.
My first winter in London. One morning, I got the same clutch at my heart, the same cold feeling that I had experienced several times at Passchendaele.
Evening news! England not well with disaster, think, sir!
Star special, tragedy strikes! Is England doomed?
Stand it! Collapse of England!
Give me all three!
One at a time, gents, if you please!
Thank you, madam.
Come on, no, just give me the paper, don't worry about the change. Thank you, sir.
Oh, God! Oh, no!
Star, please.
Star, sir, much obliged. Next!
Is England doomed? Nearly found a spot. Devastating attack at Melbourne. Hobbs out first ball. Hearn 9, Woolley not. England's appalling debacle. Can Hendren save us?
We don't take things seriously enough in this country, sir. Damnation take it all. It all comes up treating it as a game, sir. England have brought shame on themselves, sir. Shame, you hear? At Melbourne. Disgraceful, sir. Disgraceful. Outrageous! It isn't cricket!
After the long English winter, May had come at last. The trees in the Chelsea avenues were in bud. I was feeling jaded. I'd not only been trying to write this book, I'd also been struggling to learn the very art of writing. One morning, at 7 o'clock, a cool breeze was bringing fragrance all the way from Essex. I lay in bed till I could stand it no longer. An extra insidious puff of air arrived, with a cargo of rose scent and haymaking and honeysuckle, which of course was impossible. But anyway...
The English countryside! Here I come!
Winchester gravestones. The college buildings.
And as you see, very impressive stonework. The most important fact, sir, is that Winchester is nearly 50 years older than Eton. Our school motto, sir, manners maketh man.
Ah, well, a fine idea, putting kindliness above flourishment or learning. Though you couldn't really make it a toast at an old boy's dinner, could you? Or shout at a football match, "Come on, manners maketh man!"
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Can you tell me, please, what that tree is?
That's Lord's tree, sir.
Lord's tree? And what is that?
It's called that, sir, because only men in lords are allowed to sit on the seat at the foot of it.
I'm sorry to appear stupid, but when you say men and lords, do you refer to the peers of the realm?
By no means. Men and lords are the men in the cricket 11.
Oh, I see. The cricket 11 is called lords because they go to lords to play cricket.
No, sir. They don't go to lords.
Then why are they called lords?
Because we used until quite recently to play at lords against Eton.
Ah, now I begin to understand. Until a few years ago. Well, how many years, by the way?
About 70 or 80, sir.
Quite so. Just the other day. And the boys in the cricket 11?
Men.
I beg your pardon?
Men. We are all men here. There are no boys.
Ah, I see. Well, thank you for your trouble.
It was a pleasure. Oh, would you like some toffee?
That's very kind.
I have plenty.
Oh, well, thank you.
Not at all. Goodbye.
Perhaps it was the toffee that began a kind of trance in me. I climbed St. Catherine's Hill until I reached a clump of trees at the top and sat down on a little grassy slope. Below, the glittering streams of the Itchen. Beyond, the playing fields with their white dots of cricketers and the line of the Roman road clear, a chalky arrow as far as the blue horizon. Was I dozing now? The landscape seemed somehow different. The Roman road was disappearing. A thick white mist was rolling up the valley from the direction of the sea, wreathing itself around the ancient town. Silence. The fog flattened itself and narrowed and spun itself out into the shape of a snow-white road. that stretched as far as the eye could reach towards the English Channel in the south and over the edge of the English Downs in the north. Perfectly natural thing. If a road can suddenly become a wall of mist, why shouldn't a wall of mist become a road? That's very reasonable. Ideal. Yes. This is the way to learn about a country or a people. Lie in the grass and watch. Let the material come to you. That's the ticket. No traffic on the road, though. Well, just wait.
Whether there's any room for lyrical poetry in the name of refusal to be lyrical, or do we have to abandon the whole
special rule entirely? On either side, never let it be. I am with the surest sota, the drought of March hath pursued.
How do I love thee? Let me count the way.
Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair.
The long light shakes across the legs, and the wild cataract leaps in glory.
And for that minute, a blackbird sang.
Good heavens! Poets. Davis was right. They're all poets.
All right, men. At the ready. Stand by the fire.
Ready?
All right, men. False alarm. At ease. False alarm. All clear.
Very good, sir.
Time, don't you think? Black cat? Pink mouse?
Shall we shock Will? Shall we shock?
Follow the great bowler, eh?
Mr. Hodge? Bill, is that you?
Let's not stand upon the order of our going, Ben, old chap. But go at once. Come along.
Oh, well. Time to find some tea.
In England, They're England by A.G. MacDonnell, Donald Cameron was played by Tony Curran and Mr. Hodge by Ian Hislop. Ewan Griffith played Evan Davis and Alfred Molina was Tommy Huggins. Gwenny was played by Jill Gascoigne, Mr. Bloomer by Michael York and Rupert Harcourt by Rufus Sewell. Esmeralda, Sophie Winkleman, Sir Henry, Ian Ogilvie, Pendragon, Lloyd Owen and Shakespeare Pollock, J.D. Cullum. The many other characters were played by Kenneth Danziger, Julian Holloway, Darren Richardson, Carolyn Seymour, Alan Shearman, Simon Templeman, Oliver Dillon, Daisy Hayden, and Matthew Wolfe. Sound design was by Mark Holden. England, They're England was dramatised by Archie Scottney, directed by Martin Jarvis, and is a Jarvis and Ayres production for BBC Radio 4.
This is BBC Radio 4. After the chimes of Big Ben, Her Majesty the Queen.